Kim Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere. Well, today, thank goodness, we have Andrew Spell of the Metro New York North Chapter of the American Red Cross with all that has been going on with hurricanes and tropical storms and tornadoes and high winds, et cetera. I have some big questions for Andrew. So welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Darby. Always great to be here.
Well, you know, the other day when we had that big storm, I had not even realized the damage that had occurred. I just was sort of grumping around over the fact that it took me 2 hours to get from Porchester Costco home, which normally would be probably a 15-minute trip, only to find out three trees hit my house, and it's no wonder there are so many things that are out all over town. I'm sure during this kind of emergency, the Red Cross has been put on high alert to help people, not only in Connecticut, but certainly all up and down the coast.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, quite a storm that affected so many people, you know, all the way from Florida to North Carolina, all the way up the coast to our area, and there were multiple power outages. I still think there's some people that continue to be out of power, and as you said, so many streets were blocked with major trees down and trees that fell on people's property and on their houses, and, you know, we did get quite a few calls, and we're still currently, you know, receiving some follow-up calls, especially for people who, you know, have a tree maybe on their home and they aren't able to get out, or they, you know, some special needs clients as well have called in, you know, that might not have power but have medical equipment in their home that you know, they need to use. So we have actually received quite an uptick of calls, especially, you know, since the storm happened.
Wow, that's really something. So what actually does happen in the case where a family, a home has lost power, but maybe they're on some kind of, as you said, a medical device that is powered by electricity and they need it for survival?
Yeah, so what we do is, you know, we're lucky enough to have a group of health services volunteers. So these are, you know, nurses or paramedics, EMTs, who are able to talk with these clients, you know, because we're dealing with the COVID pandemic. They're able to chat with the clients on the phone, assess their needs. And if we're able to, we can try to put them in a hotel so that they're somewhere where they have power and they can, you know, have access to these medical equipment, whether it's oxygen or, you know, something else that they rely on. There are a lot of, you know, people with medical needs or special needs that don't have power, which is very scary. So a lot of what we did was put people in hotels. Luckily, we didn't get any large-scale requests as of yet where the power was out to, you know, have to open any type of shelters.
Right. Well, that's certainly good. What happens in a case, God forbid, there's an apartment building and there's a huge fire and the people get out, but they don't have that preparedness, as you've often described, that is so necessary, of that bag you just grab and go that has your medications and your information and things like that. How do you get medical, or maybe you don't get medical supplies, to people that are reliant on it?
Yeah, so, you know, it is very tricky, especially because of the current pandemic. We've had to kind of adjust some of our protocols. So, you know, after a big fire, or, you know, like in this case, after the storm and people might not have access to medication, we do have some relationships with local pharmacies. Our volunteers can talk to the pharmacist or their doctors to replace medication if people can't get to it. So that's one of the roles of our health services volunteers. They kind of advocate for the clients and, you know, verify what happened to the clients and kind of make those contacts. You know, of course, if it's a large group of people displaced, we can open a shelter, but what we're really focusing on now is actually trying to put people in a hotel setting or kind of a dormitory setting because of the COVID-19 and the need for people to be distanced. So a lot of what we're focusing on now is when people are displaced, rather than opening what we call a congregate shelter, it's safer to do non-congregate housing where people kind of have more private space and, you know, aren't as close together.
Well, that sounds like a very smart idea. I was listening to the news earlier today, and, you know, there are so many news programs on and so many different doctors and epidemiologists, but this one particular epidemiologist was saying, unless we can get to the majority of Americans wearing masks and social distancing, this could drag on until 2022.
Wow.
Which I want to assume that, well, because, you know, just like today in Georgia, this week in Georgia, they opened the school, and a second grader had COVID. So all the kids who had started school had to be sent home for 2-week quarantine.
Right.
Which imagine that does to working families that need that child care at school. It's all this upsy-downsy that keeps just things off balance.
Absolutely. You know, and that's why I think this is sort of an unprecedented time for, of course, for many organizations, but especially for the Red Cross when it comes to our sheltering policies and practices, because this pandemic has really affected the entire country when it comes to people needing to social distance, of course, wear masks and, you know, wash their hands. So a lot of our protocols now, if we do have to open a shelter where we do have people together, after the storm, for example, in North Carolina, there was a county which is extremely rural, and we did get reports that there just weren't hotels available. There was no option, you know, for people to go to a hotel. I think they said within 50 miles of where people lived. So they did have to open, you know, more of a traditional type of shelter, but, of course, space people out, have multiple locations, so, you know, larger buildings with less people and open more shelters and, of course, make sure people have masks. And then we would do, you know, a screening of all the volunteers and clients on a daily basis to make sure people were staying safe.
That would also, I would have to believe, incur huge costs. Instead of being able to have one shelter, you have to have multiple. And you also now have to layer in the masks and maybe more gloves and face shields and all the different things. How is the American Red Cross supporting all this financially?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point, Darby. The financial costs, you know, even just putting people, as you could imagine, in multiple hotel rooms, the cost for that. And like you said, all the protective equipment, our nurses, EMTs, paramedics, you know, when they're meeting with clients or operating in a shelter, they have to have that extra level of protection if they are evaluating people that could, you know, potentially have symptoms and they're kind of doing that work. We have some, you know, secluded areas that we could open in a shelter, but all that, you know, takes additional supplies. And then, of course, at our local blood drives, many people know we also are taking the temperature of donors when they arrive. So all that has contributed to a much larger cost for us. So our, you know, development folks across the country are doing their best to really get the word out about our need for financial donations, especially so that we're ready for a storm like that, you know, just happened, like the most recent tropical storm. And this season is predicted to be above average when it comes to, you know, named hurricanes and storms. So we're worried that this might just be the beginning of multiple storms that could affect, you know, more of the country, and then we'll have, you know, additional needs to house clients, you know, throughout the United States.
So the best thing would be to go on the American Red Cross website to see where to donate?
Absolutely, yeah. So the best thing is if you go to the redcross.org website, you can make financial donation right on there. You know, and if it's something you want to designate it specifically to the response to the recent tropical storm, or you just want to give the money to helping general disaster relief during the season, you're able to, you know, decide where your donation goes. Or you could always call 1-800-RED-CROSS if you would, you know, be more comfortable doing it on the phone, and, you know, can do that with a credit card as well, if that's easier. So those are, yes, absolutely the best ways is either on the website or call the toll-free number. And really, that financial support would be going to really support clients, especially during this very trying hurricane season, while we're dealing with some severe storms and, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic and the precautions we need to take there as well.
Now, I know you've been with the Red Cross for at least a decade. Right?
Yes, yep, exactly.
Just a decade. So you're more knowledgeable, certainly, than in my memory. But it seems, I can't, you will know, to me, that this year, 2020, we've had more, across the country, we've had COVID, which has just been horrific. We've had fires. We've had floods. We've had all sorts of storms that have come across the country. It just seems like I think it was Queen Elizabeth who said, "Annus horribilis," a terrible year, and we're only in August.
Absolutely. No, I think you're totally right. Even while we were responding as an organization to the storm out west in California, there were and currently are still wildfires, you know, where people were displaced. And out west, the local Red Cross there was also doing similar work to what we were doing, you know, in the Northeast with requests for people who had to be out of their homes, homes that were damaged, homes that were destroyed. So even though it's a different type of disaster, yeah, you know, we're all dealing with those similar, like we mentioned, the COVID-19 precautions, I think make things even that much more difficult, making sure we are still caring for our clients, but, you know, we do have to keep our distance. We have to wear masks. Of course, it's harder to be as personable with a client when you have a mask on, but, you know, for everyone's safety, we're very careful about that, whether it's the local disaster response to a fire or, you know, when we're operating in a situation with many clients. But, you know, even, like I said, for this most recent storm, we did get quite a few requests for people whose homes were damaged because, you know, a tree fell on the home and now it's not livable. They can't even, you know, fix the power until the home is repaired. So those are the types of, you know, calls and requests where our volunteers are virtually screening the clients, talking to them on the phone, and then providing that financial support for them.
Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com, anywhere. Andrew Sindel, my very dear friend from the Metro New York North chapter of the American Red Cross, is with me today. We've been talking about COVID and the recent hurricane that has come up from Florida, the tropical storms, the wind damage, and all the things that are going on. But if you don't mind, Andrew, I'd like to just take a little bit of a shift and go to blood drives. If you could perhaps review, you know, again, because we're all still in this COVID situation, are there any restrictions on going to a blood drive or who can give blood if you've recovered from COVID or you had it and you're over it, sort of, or if someone has COVID, can they get blood? How is it all working?
Yeah, absolutely. So as people can imagine, because of the pandemic in general across the country, we did lose out on a lot of blood drives that had to cancel, of course, local businesses that had closed, and of course, all the schools and colleges that we really rely on for a lot of our blood drives. So luckily, the blood drives have again picked up. We've been able to use community centers, church buildings, even some businesses have opened large rooms for us just to use the space, which has been great. And luckily, you know, when it comes to donating, as long as you're healthy and have been symptom-free for at least 2 weeks, generally, you know, if you did have any symptoms, a cough, fever, cold, you know, we definitely ask you wait at least 2 weeks until you're symptom-free. And it is definitely advised to make an appointment in advance, especially now for the blood drives. A lot of the drives do have less capacity, as people can imagine. We want people to be safe and distanced at the blood drive, so people not sitting right next to each other at the registration area. And, of course, the tables are more spread out, as well as our staff being more spread out. So the drives do have less capacity. So, therefore, we do ask that you go to redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS where you can make an appointment in advance. But anyone, you know, that is healthy is eligible to donate. We do have a thorough screening process that takes place. So when you arrive to the drive, we have a volunteer that will check your temperature, make sure you don't have a temperature, ask you some general screening questions as well. But another way to expedite the experience is you can go online and do the rapid pass questions. We've talked about that, I know, in the past. Within 24 hours before your donation, you can go online and do some of the questions and some of the screening on the redcrossblood.org website, which can make your donation experience a little faster.
Well, that's great. Certainly helpful if you can get on the website to do it. And where are some of the local drives that are going on currently?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a few drives coming up in the immediate area. So the next available drive is on Tuesday, August 11th, and that's the Stanford Church of Christ. That's 1264 High Ridge Road. Again, Tuesday, August 11th, and that's from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. So that's going to be a full-day blood drive. And then the following day, Wednesday, August 12th, at the Community Center in Rybrook, 32 Garibaldi Place in Rybrook, Wednesday, August 12th, from 2 p.m. until 7 p.m. So those are two upcoming ones. And then on Monday, August 17th, so the following week, at the First Presbyterian Church, also in Stanford, 1101 Bedford Street, on Monday, August 17th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. So those drives are definitely available, and if people are eligible to donate, we you know, would appreciate them making an appointment.
That's great. And I know you're Metro New York North, so there are other drives going on in Westchester and Dutchess and Putnam. They just have to go on the website to see it?
Exactly. So there are drives throughout the area, through different parts of Westchester, through different parts exactly of Putnam, all throughout the tri-state area. So going on the website is definitely the best way. You'll be able to see if there's availability at the drives. Like I mentioned, some are full, which is a great thing for us, but we don't want people to show up at those drives and be turned away. So definitely going on the website, checking out the appointment times and making an appointment is the best way to have a successful donation.
That sounds good. I know you're in charge of volunteers and volunteer opportunities. In this new COVID environment, what are some of the volunteer opportunities that afford people who want to go out and be face-to-face and for people who want to be home and still be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's one program that we have for the Red Cross, and this is actually a national initiative this year, which is kind of unique for us due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We are looking to recruit a reserve group of volunteers, something kind of a little unique, which is a shorter-term volunteer opportunity. And this is a group of volunteers we're looking to train. The training can be done all remotely. It's about 2.5 hours of online training. And these are folks that would be willing to support our shelters in person if we needed to open them in the tri-state area. So if we did have another tropical storm or hurricane and there was, you know, even more damage and we did have to open shelters or put multiple people into hotels, we, of course, need volunteers to help with the staffing for those. So this is a role that goes from about now until November through when the hurricane season is. And people, like I said, you do the training online. It's great for people who want to be able to help face-to-face. Of course, we would provide all the protective equipment if you do volunteer in a shelter, so gloves, a mask, all that protection. And really the requirement is that you do have a valid driver's license so you can get to the shelters if it is safe. So, of course, we wouldn't require you to drive in any dangerous conditions, but generally this would be after a storm. And we ask that people who would be willing to support approximately 5 ships during the hurricane season if needed. So the shifts are about 12 hours generally, and those could be day shifts or night shifts. So this is a great role for someone who maybe works part-time, is a stay-at-home parent but can, you know, leave here and there and has daycare for their children. And like I said, it's kind of a temporary role, and you're trained, and then we call on you if the need is there to support our shelters in the area.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful thing. Now, is the Red Cross headquarters open in Greenwich currently?
That's actually a great question. So our offices are actually closed just for safety reasons. So our staff and volunteers are all working remotely, but we do have training and meetings and, interaction with everyone virtually. So we use Microsoft Teams or Zoom to keep in touch with people. And we do have weekly meetings and check-ins and support for everyone. So people who are new that join the organization will still be able to speak with a supervisor on their computer, you know, see what they look like, talk to them face-to-face, just not in person possibly, but,
right.
Definitely we'll be able to have a one-on-one chat with their supervisor and kind of learn more about this role. But, you know, it's really an exciting role because it does give people the ability to do the training virtually and then say, okay, if there is a large event and shelters need to be open, that they're able to help. And then we also have a role for people with a medical background, like you mentioned earlier, EMTs or paramedics, nurses who want to do this type of work in a shelter where they can help just assess clients' needs and help with that during hurricane season. We're also looking for those types of folks that can do a short-term, commitment to helping the organization. So those are some of the in-person roles. Of course, we also have the local blood drives in Greenwich, and we're always looking for people to support those. If you are interested in kind of doing a more regular, once a month, twice a month sort of role and helping our donors with registration and through the donation process and taking their temperature and all of that. And we provide training as well. So those are some of the in-person roles. And I know you mentioned, Darby, some opportunities maybe for people who are interested in doing remote type of volunteering as well.
Yes, that's so very important.
Yeah, so for people that are looking to still be able to give back but maybe aren't comfortable leaving their homes, especially now, due to the current environment, we do have some roles. One is our volunteer casework role, so being able to follow up with our clients after the disaster. I know we've talked about this type of role on previous shows together where, these are the folks that provide resources and referrals to clients after the disaster, so 24 to 48 hours. So a lot of that training now is all done remotely, so you do have to be, fairly comfortable with a computer, and as long as you have internet access and a phone, that's a role that we're actually training people remotely. And then also we have some other sort of administrative volunteer roles for people who, are interested in helping follow up with other volunteers or help us with some of our databases and keeping records together and following up on people's training. That can be done remotely as well. So there definitely are opportunities if people, for now, are more comfortable being at home, which is totally understandable, and then when the pandemic resides, they're able to maybe do some more in-person volunteering.
So, Andrew, how many volunteers would you say you oversee in the whole Metro New York North chapter?
So the Metro New York North chapter in total, we have about 800 volunteers.
Wow.
Which is quite a number. Many of these are our youth volunteers, so we have a great group of youth volunteers who are still helping do some remote volunteering, now that the schools are kind of unsure whether they're going to open in person or be partially open in person in the fall. So we do have, a great group of volunteers across all of our lines of service. But with this actual program for the Hurricane Reserve volunteers across the region, and this is all of the greater New York area, so New York City and Greenwich, Westchester, Rockland, and then Long Island, we're actually looking to bring on 1,000 new volunteers across the region to support this initiative, which is quite an ambitious goal, as you can imagine. but in case there is a storm that really impacts the whole area, we would, have the need to open multiple shelters, especially this year because of the the need to space people out, it, you know, the request would be a lot higher for the amount of shelters.
That is amazing. So is the Red Cross predicting that this will be a worse year for hurricanes?
It is, yeah, absolutely. So the predictions from the Weather Service and what we've been told and on calls that I know I've been on is, yes, they're predicting it to be above average to an average year of how many hurricanes and how severe they are. I know every day we're on kind of an update call, and our national office is always mentioning there's another, you know, storm forming. It could be 5, 6, 7 days out, you know, on the water. But they're always monitoring storms that are coming, and it does seem like already this season a lot are coming.
Drew, I want to thank you. I hear my music playing, which is my signal that it's to bid you adieu until next month. So stay safe, and boy, another thousand.
Thanks, Darby.
You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere.